from Mount Pleasant to Mexico, Lebanon to Indiana, this is Lincoln Radio Journal. On this edition, the good news is the roaring national economy has resulted in the creation of tens of thousands of jobs. The bad news is there is a skills gap, with many businesses unable to find qualified employees. David Taylor from the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is here to lead a Capital Watch roundtable discussion. And New York's efforts to pick winners and losers have backfired as Amazon cancels its expansion plans and higher minimum wages have caused consumer prices to spike. I'll have a town hall commentary. I'm Loman Henry, and welcome to Lincoln Radio Journal. We'll get to our Capital Watch crew in just a couple of minutes, but first, news headlines from patownhall.com. Pennsylvania will once again be in the national spotlight as a special election will be held in May to fill the congressional seat vacated by former Congressman Tom Marino. Marino resigned his seat reportedly due to health concerns. The seat is in reliably Republican territory, but the GOP lost what was considered a relatively safe seat in a special election last year to now Congressman Connor Lamb. The Republican nominee will be chosen in a party conferee convention to be held on March 2nd. So far, five candidates have publicly announced their interest in the seat, although more than 20 individuals have asked the party for consideration. Democrats have already selected Penn State Assistant Professor Mark Friedenberg as their nominee. The special election will be held the same day as the May 21st primary election, with the winner filling the seat until next year's regularly scheduled congressional elections. In other special election news, Franklin County Commissioner Dave Keller has entered the race for the 33rd state Senate seat, being vacated by Senator Richard Alloway, who resigned last month. The seat is centered in Franklin and Adams County. It is heavily Republican. Doug Mastriano, a retired Army colonel who ran for Congress last year, also has entered the race. Party conferees will select the Republican nominee for that special election, also scheduled to be held on the date of the May primary. Pennsylvania's antiquated approach to property tax reassessment is again ending up before the state Supreme Court as Beaver County seeks to overturn lower court rulings requiring it to undertake a countywide reassessment. That is something the county has not done since 1982. Property assessments determine how much property owners must pay in real estate taxes. Therefore, reassessments are highly controversial, and county officials are reluctant to enter into the process. However, over time, assessments become dated, creating inequities in the system. Read about all things Pennsylvania at patownhall.com. The national economy has now fully recovered from the Great Recession, and companies are on a hiring binge. But there is a lack of qualified workers, and this skills gap has placed a new emphasis on workforce development. David Taylor of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association is joined by Gordon Denlinger and Rebecca Euler from the National Federation of Independent Business for a Capital Watch look at the problem. David?
And welcome once again to Capital Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, two of my favorite teammates, Gordon Denlinger, Executive State Director for the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania. Gordon, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Dave.
And Rebecca Euler, Legislative Director for NFIB Pennsylvania. Rebecca, thanks for being here.
Great to be back, David. Thank you.
So, today, I want to tackle one of the really pressing problems. In fact, I would say it's the number one challenge facing the employer community, and that is the challenge of the workforce, the skills gap, the fact that Pennsylvania does not have enough of the people with the skills for the jobs that are on offer, even though we still have people who are out of work, either looking for work and can't find it, or on the sidelines. And so with this challenge, the question then becomes, what are we going to do about it?
You know, it's a huge question. And we are at technical full employment at this point, which is the good news. So this is a good issue. But ultimately, our small business owners, who we at NFIB are connected to, this is their number one issue. They cannot find quality people, folks who will do the basics, show up on time, pass the drug test, make a good appearance, and come with solid work ethic to do the job that's needed. So this is a huge one all across Pennsylvania, and I think we're hearing policymakers start to come forward on it. We're very excited about that. We'll get into some of that in our discussion here. But yeah, it's a huge issue starting to limit the economy at this point.
So, Rebecca, I know that there's been a flurry of activity, or at least a lot of talk along these lines. It began, I guess, this year with the governor's budget address. But could you describe how that's manifested in different ways up until now?
Sure. Well, the governor in his budget proposal gave several workforce development initiatives that he willing to try. And we're taking a look at those. There aren't a lot of details available yet, but one of them that he did propose, which sort of stood out to us, is this Keystone Economic Development and Workforce Command Center. One of the purposes of that command center is to actually look at our current workforce programs, which span about seven different agencies, and look for duplication, look for what's working, what's not, try and sort of get a grip on the immense sort of bureaucracy that is workforce development here in Pennsylvania, and coordinate it a little better. So we're anxious to see the details about that command center, because we think bringing some sort of organization and focus to the workforce development program is something that's dire, in dire need.
Amen to that. And one of the options, something that I've been preaching for quite some time now, is to ask the federal government for a waiver, because these programs are partly state taxpayer money and also partly federal taxpayer money, that the strings attached from federal rules apply to these programs. And so for us to be able to disentangle the spaghetti here and to make a system that functions better, if we would ask the federal government for permission to experiment, that would ease all of this. And in fact, I'm told that the folks out in Indiana have applied for such a waiver and received one.
The states as incubators of innovation, I think, is the idea there. And spot on. We really need Pennsylvania to become one of those places where we disentangle ourselves from the federal requirements and get that waiver in place. And we've been watching the budget hearings that are currently happening over under the dome, and looking to sense, do the cabinet secretaries understand that they can apply for the waiver, and in fact that some waivers have been granted, as you mentioned, Indiana, which is doing some great things in this area. We understand they're doing a thorough review of their programs, what works, what does not, what can be consolidated, and really trying to modernize their workforce programs without spending more dollars.
Exactly.
And that's the key, right?
Exactly.
There.
There's already an awful lot of money that's being applied to this. It's a matter of effectiveness.
Right. And one of the other proposals the governor had was to increase funding for the PA Smart program, which was, I think, put out as sort of a trial program last year, which worked well. And he's proposing to put more money toward that program, which is targeted toward youth and high school age students, and getting them career job experience. So he's proposing to add more funding for that program. But that program is funded by state funds, which it doesn't qualify for the federal requirements, which we've been talking about. So if that's truly something that does work and we want to emphasize it, then let's apply for a waiver so that we can use existing federal funds toward a program that we believe works in our state.
The command center, which is, let's call it what it is, a government program to try to hook up supply mm-hmm. with demand, you know, hook mm-hmm. People who are looking for jobs up with where those jobs might be, is still a government planned economy kind of program. At the end of the day, it's not the free market sorting things out. The free market is always much more efficient. It matches supply with demand. This is the government trying to figure this out, and government is always three or four steps behind.
Yeah, sadly so. But it's already such a tangle that, I mean, inevitably, I guess it's going to require some kind of executive leadership to make sense of it. But, you know, again, I want to return to the theme of what's already out there. For example, people look to the state system of higher education, which is large, which is expensive, and in some instances with some of its campuses is underperforming, and that there's long been a need to reinvent and repurpose some of those institutions, that it seems to me that would be a perfect opportunity to, you know, again, to help those institutions to reinvent themselves by becoming places where they are imparting the skills to students that those young people need to succeed in the economy.
One thing we're seeing as the budget hearings are rolling over in the House and the Senate is the focus on minimum wage. Clearly, that's been a high priority of discussion among the folks who are there. And we find, you know, we're kind of talking workforce development issues here today, that it's interesting to note that the governor's kind of at cross purposes with himself on this, because workforce development is about getting more folks into productive society. And that's often the folks that are at the margins, we'll say, folks who are low or no skilled, teenagers who need that first job, folks coming out of incarceration, maybe folks returning to work after a long gap, you know, a long period of time. They need those doors to be wide open. And we do know that with a minimum wage increase, that's going to limit the number of available positions, cut back hours. So we just notice that the governor's somewhat working against himself on this issue.
One thing that we're hearing from our small businesses is that there's really a dearth of soft skills in the workforce. So new workers that are coming in to interview are just not real accustomed to work environments, so that they're not used to showing up on time. They're not used to being held accountable for their work. And those soft skills are exactly what a young person or a person just entering the workforce can learn in a minimum wage job. So we absolutely would not want to cut off those minimum wage jobs, because like Gordon said, they are an opportunity for a lot of people to join the workforce and gain those soft skills. Raising the minimum wage is just going to delay the point at which young people are exposed to those skills.
One of the other things that's happening that is very frustrating, very alarming to me is that, of course, that Governor Wolf has set Lieutenant Governor Fetterman on a statewide listening tour talking about decriminalizing recreational marijuana. And, you know, as you folks at NFIB already know, that the inability of new hires to pass a drug test is a major, major problem with getting qualified new hires, because there are so many different contexts in which somebody has to test clean, to have somebody working in a healthcare environment where you would have access to pharmaceuticals, that you can't have drug users who are in that environment, that in finance, that you can't have somebody who's a drug user having access to other people's money. Certainly, you know, in the manufacturing space, that you have heavy equipment, bladed instruments, chemical reactions, extreme temperatures, high voltage, like a lot of dangerous things going on. And that's why we have to have a sober workforce. And so the more permissive society is about drug use, the more people who will be users. And as a result, it's going to become even more difficult to find those qualified new hires. You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers. With me on the program today from NFIB Pennsylvania, Gordon Denlinger and Rebecca Euler. So anyway, that's, again, there's no doubt that this workforce challenge is a multifaceted problem, and we're going to have to work through, you know, all of these iterations. But, you know, we should at the start make sure that these policies are not at cross purposes with themselves.
Absolutely. And you touched on the drug issue and the recreational use of marijuana. You know, there are real impacts as a result of that kind of a direction. And an emergency room doc who's a friend of mine shared with me a few years ago the cognitive impairment that happens to teenagers who get involved in using cannabis. And the percentage that he put on it was a 14% cognitive decline. So that takes someone who's at genius level and takes them to average. That takes average and makes it unemployable. So, you know, the idea that kids aren't going to get their hands on this if it's all over society, I think, is fallacious.
You know, with Indiana's waiver on workforce about, you know, the states being laboratories of democracy, in fact, there are states that have moved, you know, to decriminalize recreational marijuana. Colorado is one of those states. And, you know, certainly the Colorado is finding that it is not a consequence-free undertaking.
Yes, I think they're finding there are unintended consequences to, legalizing marijuana in Colorado and other states. And one of those that off the top of my head, I've heard about is the problem with testing for marijuana. There's no good test for cannabis that is time constrained, like, for instance, an alcohol test. So it will cause issues for employers. Inherently. And we are hearing from our small business members already that drugs, as David mentioned, are inhibiting them hiring people in the workforce. That's absolutely true. There's a lot of people who are not able to pass the drug tests who otherwise might be qualified for jobs. So this would exacerbate that problem, no doubt.
And Rebecca, I just want to say again for the sake of the listeners, this is not like a personal opinion of mine. Like my personal opinion is that it's, that doing this is unhealthy and unwise. But it's not my opinion that in Pennsylvania we have a workers' compensation law and that businesses to operate lawfully have to have workers' compensation insurance. And so like to be able to have an intact policy, you have to be able to report to your carrier that you have established workplace safety protocols. And so it's like that's not optional. Like, again, if we want to talk about repealing the workers' comp law, that's a different conversation. I can't imagine that'll go very far. We're also required to comply with OSHA. I would hope that we would all be able to agree, left and right, business and labor, Democrat, Republican, all be able to agree the only acceptable number of workplace injuries is zero. And that for people who are suffering from addiction, that we would want them to be free from addiction. And for people who are without the dignity of work, we would want them to be able to attain the dignity of work. It's like I would hope those would be things that we could all agree on. And yet expanding drug use in Pennsylvania is going to work against all those things.
As we're looking at this nationally, there are certainly other states that are going down this road. My hope is that Pennsylvania goes very slow, that we take a step back and look at the unintended consequences that will roll from this. And certainly, we're talking workforce development issues here, other societal issues. Let's find out what those impacts are. And when we can't get enough people into the workforce because so many can't pass a drug test, here again we are at cross purposes. We're going to, decriminalize recreational use. And there will be more people who cannot pass a drug test. So, to your point, here we are fighting against ourselves once again.
Mm. Well, when it comes to building out the workforce, trying to get people off the sidelines, recently, Governor Wolf expanded Medicaid under Obamacare to include people who are able-bodied of working age who have no dependents. And he has vetoed multiple times requirements for people in that category to either be working, to be seeking work, to be getting training so that they can take up work or spending time, being volunteers at civic organizations, again, to get them moving, to get them some kind of credential that they could then market to a future employer. It just seems like such common sense that would be healthy for people in those programs. What's NFIB's view on that?
Absolutely. We would like to see those people in the workforce. We need the workers. And it's like we talked in the very beginning, the lack of workers in the workforce today is holding the economy back. And to the extent that we can get these folks into the workforce and involved in earning a living, and like you said, that's something that helps society. That helps all of us. And to the extent we can make these workforce programs, and I hope this is part of the discussion here in the future, workforce programs work with medical assistance, for example, recipients to get them back into the workforce in jobs that pay well so that they have a career. They have a career, not just a job. And that's something we would really like to see to work hand in hand with to have the assistance work hand in hand with the workforce needs that we have.
And again, this is about helping people, to achieve personal and financial independence. And Rebecca, a point that you just touched on, I think is also important, that we as a society are healthier when people can make contributions, when they can find the dignity and purpose of work and be, you know, it's an old metaphor, it's kind of hackneyed, but that they can be the people who are helping to pull the wagon and not just the people who have to be riding in it.
There is an essential dignity of work that is so important. And I think that is universally recognized. The question is, how do we get more folks into those positions, those careers, not just, you know, jobs, but careers. And I think, you know, at this point with full employment, with bumping up against the edges of this economic expansion, we do applaud the governor and, you know, for coming forward on this issue. It all comes down to the details. Will it be about free market type solutions? Will it be about government mandates?
Yeah. And again, finding the things that work and following through with all of the metrics to ensure that you know, that these are making good on the inherent promises, that's doing what really needs to be done. Well, as ever, it is a great joy to share the airwaves with my friends from the National Federation of Independent Business in Pennsylvania, Executive State Director Gordon Denlinger, Legislative Director Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, where can the listeners go to learn more about you and Gordon and the organization?
Sure. They can check out our website at nfib.com/PA or on Facebook or Twitter.
Outstanding. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org and on the Pennsylvania Cable Network on Sunday mornings at 8:30 with PMA Perspective. Again, from Gordon and Rebecca, thanks very much for listening. We'll catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.
Thank you, David. It appears not everyone loves New York. Amazon has broken off its brief relationship with the city. Longtime New Yorkers are complaining about the rising cost of getting lunch because of a minimum wage hike, and the state treasury is coming up short due to the exodus of high earners. No, all is not well in the Democratic Socialist Republic of New York. New York's attempt to interfere in free markets by picking winners and losers has backfired spectacularly in the case of Amazon's now withdrawn decision to locate half of its Second National headquarters in Queens. The decision came after left-wing activists and politicians, such as media darling Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, blasted the lucrative package of incentives the city and state dangled before Amazon during the site selection process. A broken clock is right twice a day, as the saying goes, and it applies here. Although for the wrong reasons, Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez and her supporters were justified in their opposition to the Amazon deal. They decried the corporate welfare offered to lure Amazon to New York. Amazon played cities and states across the nation against each other in a high-profile sweepstakes, with the prize being chosen as the site for so-called HQ2. Offers of tax credits, tax relief, and outright grants of taxpayer money poured in as they attempted to lure the highly profitable enterprise to their venue. This approach to economic development is common. Cities and states often compete in efforts to get businesses to expand or locate within their boundaries. Some components of those packages do fall within the purview of government. Improvements to highway infrastructure, expanding or building water or sewer lines, cutting regulations and expediting permits and other approvals are also appropriate ways for government to help attract new business. But when companies, especially highly profitable ones that pay no federal taxes, are given hundreds of millions in state and local tax relief, then the cost must be borne by the other businesses and individual taxpayers in a city or state. In Pennsylvania, the duplicity is extreme. Philadelphia and Pittsburgh offered Amazon millions to come here, while at the same time, Governor Wolf and legislative Democrats want to tax natural gas drillers who are already here simply because they are successful. The cost of such incentives falls particularly hard on small businesses, almost all of which are never given any such tax breaks. The Keystone Business Climate Survey of business owners and chief executive officers has polled this question repeatedly over the years, and the people who actually own and run businesses already here say they would rather the state improve its overall tax and business climate than offer targeted incentives to favored companies. Neither Pennsylvania nor New York has much going for them on that front. The American Legislative Exchange Council's newly released Rich States, Poor States report listed Pennsylvania's tax and business climate as 38th among the states. New York ranked dead last at 50th. New York had the worst tax and business climate in the nation, even before its recent increase of the minimum wage to $15 per hour. In recent days, price hikes have taken hold at New York City restaurants, and customer complaints are on the rise. When mandated by government to pay higher labor costs, businesses have few options, and raising prices is one of them. The Lincoln Institute's Keystone Business Climate Survey has also found that owners and CEOs will cut employee hours, eliminate jobs, or even go out of business entirely if the minimum wage is increased. Governor Wolf, wanting to emulate the failed policies in New York, is pushing for just such an increase in Penns Woods. He also wants to mandate a minimum salary for teachers. Both proposals fail to take into consideration the ability of those paying the salary to cover increased labor costs. An inevitable result of this government meddling in the marketplace is that businesses and people leave. New York has seen a decline in state tax revenue because not only businesses, but high earners are fleeing the state to escape its high tax burden. Pennsylvania has one advantage over New York, a state legislature that has largely kept a Democratic Socialist governor from implementing disastrous economic policies. Despite the fact these policies have already failed in our neighboring state, Tom Wolf continues to blindly walk down the same path. It remains to be seen whether or not the legislature joins him on that journey. With a Town Hall commentary, I'm Loman Henry. If you miss hearing Lincoln Radio Journal on your favorite radio station, audio of our complete program is available on our websites, LincolnRadioJournal.com and LincolnInstitute.org. For 24 years, Lincoln Radio Journal has been heard on public affairs-minded radio stations throughout the Commonwealth, including WRVI-FM in St. Mary's, WRJV-FM in Breezewood, along with WBXQ-FM in Altoona, Pennsylvania. And the Pennsylvania Leadership Conference is coming up in a few weeks. This year, the 30th anniversary Pennsylvania Leadership Conference will be held April 5th and 6th at the Radisson Penn Harris Convention Center in Camp Hill. This year's featured speaker will be Wall Street Journal columnist and commentator Kimberly Strassel, Jimmy Kemp of the Jack Kemp Foundation, Kay Coles James of the Heritage Foundation, Mark Janis from the Liberty Justice Center, Salita Zeno from the Washington Examiner, Tim Gegelein from Focus on the Family, Congressman Scott Perry, and numerous others will also speak. There will be panel presentations on key state and national issues, workshops, and the opportunity to network with conservatives from throughout the state. To learn more and to register for the 2019 Pennsylvania Leadership Conference, go to paleadershipconference.org. The Lincoln Radio Journal is produced weekly by the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. The Lincoln Institute is completely funded through the generosity of individuals, corporations, and philanthropic foundations. They include the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association, the Allegheny Foundation of Pittsburgh, the Houston Foundation of Coatesville, and the Worrell Foundation of Carlisle, all of whom have helped to underwrite the costs of this program. Lincoln Radio Journal is a trademark of the Lincoln Institute of Public Opinion Research, Incorporated. Comments and opinions expressed on this program are those of the guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Lincoln Institute or of this radio station. From the Lincoln Broadcast Center in Harrisburg, I'm Loman Henry. Thank you for listening to Pennsylvania's most widely broadcast public affairs radio program, Lincoln Radio Journal. Plug into the pulse of Pennsylvania. Thank you.